This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله وسلم وبارك على نبينا محمد وعلى آله وصحبه أجمعين أما بعد السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. How long do we have for the second session? 1 hour? Or?
1 hour.
1 hour exactly, yeah? Till 12 o'clock. طيب. So, we now have this very compelling question, which is, do the companions legislate? Do the companions legislate? Huh? So it's in red in front of you, saying no. But I have a problem. If they do not legislate, how can we accept that Friday has two adhan, while at the time of the Prophet ﷺ, it had one adhan? How can we explain that the Prophet ﷺ flogged those who drank intoxicants 40 lashes, while Umar, may Allah be pleased with them, made them 80 lashes? We have a number of cases that may not seem to be as we claim, and that is, the companions do not legislate. So, do they legislate or not? Again, the question, compelling question, the answer is in red. No, they don't. So how do we understand some of the incidents where the companions did something the Prophet did not do? First of all, a well-known fact that the companions do not innovate. Bid'ah is not acceptable by the companions because they never ever innovated. Ground rule number one. Ground rule number two. The Prophet stated, alayhi salatu wasalam, abide by my sunnah and the sunnah of the Khulafa ur-Rashidun, the rightly guided companions. So who instructed us to follow their sunnah? The Prophet, alayhi salatu wasalam. So they do not legislate, but rather may improvise in things that Islam needs and the Prophet indicated to only follow them. Who are they? Abu Bakr, Umar, Uthman, and Ali. And if you look, you will find everything that they have come up with serves Islam and doesn't go against it. The biggest thing and most prominent of all is the compiling of the Quran. It was Abu Bakr, may Allah be pleased with him. Or was it Uthman?
Uthman, who by Abu Bakr?
Ah. Abu Bakr or Uthman?
Abu Bakr.
It was both. The first compilation was by Abu Bakr. And this was when the Hurub al-Riddah, the wars of apostasy, took place. A lot of those who memorized the Quran were martyred. So they came to Abu Bakr and they told him, listen, those who memorize the Quran are dying and they are diminishing in number. So we have to compile the Quran so that people would not make mistakes, because as the nation grew, people came into Islam and they may find it difficult to relate to the Quran when we have only few people memorizing it. So he liked the opinion, compiled the Quran, may Allah be pleased with him. And it stayed until the time of Uthman. Of course, they ordered in the time of Abu Bakr, Zayd ibn Thabit, not Haritha. Haritha was martyred in the 8th year. Zayd ibn Thabit, He is one of the greatest scholars of the companions. He's young. He mastered, if I'm not mistaken, he mastered Hebrew in 13 days. Less than 2 weeks. He mastered it by the order of the Prophet ﷺ, so that he can relate to the Torah and read it and know if they're lying or not to him. And the Prophet said ﷺ, that he would come on the Day of Judgment ahead of the scholars of Islam by a throw of a stone. So he would be their imam way ahead of them on the Day of Judgment. So Zayd ibn Thabit compiled the Quran. Anyone who had a written, whether on a leaflet or whether on the palm tree's leaves or on a stone or on a bone, anything you have, bring it. Not that they do not memorize it, they all memorize it. Among them is Uthman. Uthman recited the Quran in one rak'ah, from cover to cover, in Hajj season, from Isha till Fajr. One rak'ah. So he was a master of the Quran in memorization, and all of them. But when he compiled the Quran, he said, anyone who comes with the Quran, he has to bring two witnesses with him. And it's a long process. Now, at the time of Uthman, now they had the Quran, okay? At the time of the Uthman, a lot of the nations entered into Islam. So the Persians, the Egyptians, the Syrians, the Coptics accepted Islam, and people had different dialects. So they came to Uthman and said, we have only one copy that is the master copy, known as Hafsa copy. So we would like to duplicate and write and send it so that people in different regions would have a roadmap to follow and the original copy. So they made four copies. Also by Zayd ibn Thabit, associated and assisted by three or four other companions from Quraysh, because they had the pure tongue of the Arabs. And they did this and it went. So now, is this legislating? No. Is it the same Quran? Yes. Nothing changed. But this was not practiced at the time of the Prophet ﷺ, though the prophecy was there. One would say, how dare they do something that was not done at the time of the Prophet ﷺ? Allah says, Alif Lam Mim, Dhalika al-Kitab. That is the book. Which book? The Quran. But it wasn't compiled. Allah telling us it is a book, which means that it will be compiled, and it was compiled. So companions do not legislate. Rather, the four caliphs, Abu Bakr, Umar, Uthman, and Ali, may Allah be pleased with them, they would improvise with little rulings that pertain into the protection of Islam. Fine. So, after the death of the Prophet عليه الصلاة والسلام, you read this on your own. I hate reading English. طيب. Now, before going to the second stage, which is the stage of pre-doctrine stage, which relates to the companions era and the tabi'in era. If we look at the companions era, there were recorded that 130 of the companions, about, give or take few, were quoted to give fatwa. How many companions were there? There were more than 100,000. Those who went for Hajj with the Prophet ﷺ were approximately 100,000. Define for me the meaning of companion.
The era of Muhammad
is not sufficient. No.
Meet.
That's all. Believe. You can meet, but you do not believe. So you meet the Prophet ﷺ. You believe in the Prophet ﷺ. Yes. This is very important, that he dies on Islam. So this is the definition of a companion of the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam. Now, can any one of you say that I'm the companion of Asim? No. I need to have like 5-6 years to know you. We have to eat together. You have to invite me a lot outside so that we can relate and say, yes, we are companions. Except when it comes to the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam, the honor of companionship is sufficient by meeting him, by believing in him, and dying on Islam. And you become a companion. But of course, there are what? Levels that go way, way up, like the 10 heavenly bound of the companions. May Allah be pleased with them. And then it can be with someone who just met the Prophet ﷺ, gave salam and left. Not even heard anything of him. There are companions that did not even hear. One of the companions was 5 years old. And he's considered to be one of the youngest. He said, all what I remember, he's a 5 years old kid, that when I saw the Prophet, he was performing wudu, and he was turning the water in his mouth. He saw me, he spit in my face. You know, when you play with the children, he said, this is the only thing I remember. But he still is considered to be a companion. What is the big role of companion? They're men and we're men. What's the difference? No. They're men, yes. We're men, doubtful. Why? The levels of the companions is so high, to the extent that the Prophet said, alayhi salatu wasalam, do not abuse, do not curse my companions. For if one of you were to give the mount of Uhud in gold for the sake of Allah, this would not reach the mud of one of them of grain, not even half of it. What does this mean? Yani, the Prophet is saying that to his companions. And you know who he said this hadith to? Does anybody know? You don't know. Do you know of some Sahabi known named Khalid ibn al-Walid?
Yes.
His nickname is? Saifullah, the sword of Allah. Great companion, right? He had a dispute verbally with Abdurrahman ibn Auf, one of the 10 heaven bound. Both from Quraysh, both are great companions. The Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam was married to the aunt of Khalid ibn Walid. And by the way, Khalid and Abdullah ibn Abbas were cousins. They had aunts, their mothers were sisters. And the third mother, or the third sister, was married to the Prophet, who was Maymuna bint al-Harith. May Allah be pleased with them all. So the Prophet, when he saw Abdurrahman ibn Auf clashing with Khalid, Khalid is Saifullah, the warrior, the great leader, he's addressing Khalid. He said, Khalid, do not abuse or curse or fight with my companions. He didn't say, I'm your companion as well. No. There is a difference between heaven and earth. This is Abdurrahman ibn Auf, one of the first 3 or 4 to accept Islam. Who are you? You accepted Islam on the 8th year of Hijrah, meaning after 21 years of Abdurrahman accepting Islam. And you're abusing my companion? By Allah, if you were to give the mountain of Uhud in gold for charity, this would not be even as close as Abdurrahman giving his full hand of grain. Not even his half hand. And this is addressed to who? To Khalid. Now, nowadays we find imbeciles, hypocrites, talking about the companions of the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam, slandering them. I'm not talking about Rafida, Shia. These are trash. I'm not even mentioning them. I'm talking about people who call themselves Sunnah. Come on live TV, talking ill about Muawiyah ibn Abi Sufyan. He used to scribe the Quran when the Wahy was revealed. The Prophet would tell him, Muawiyah, come write. His father is Abu Sufyan ibn Harb, who was an enemy, but then became a companion and then died in the cause of Allah. His sister is the mother of the believers. Umm al-Mu'mineen, what's her name? What's your mother's name? My mother's name is Fatima. Yeah, what is your the wife of the Prophet's name? Umm Habiba. What's her original name? Close. Subhanallah, so many gifts I have, but I'm not presenting to anyone. Ramla bint Abi Sufyan. These are your mothers. You have to know them. I once went to a hospital with one of my daughters. And in the reception, she said, "What's your daughter's name?" I said, "Juwayriya." And the lady said, "What?" I said, "Juwayriya." She was an Arab from Egypt. I said, "Why?" I said, "What do you mean, why?" I said, "Why choose such a name?" I said, "Juwayriya bint al-Harith, the wife of the Prophet, Umm al-Mu'mineen." I said, "Really? I never heard of this name." She's a Muslim, she's a hijabi. She has never ever heard of the names of our mother. And some, when I tell you what are the mother's name, you will say, Khadija, Amr ibn al-As. This is problematic. This is the essential of your religion. And you have to know your history. Without history, you don't have any presence. And you don't have any future. You need to know these people because inshallah when you enter Jannah, you will be with them, inshallah. So, what brought us? So, you do not come close to saying any negative thing about the companions. Dare not, because if you do, you may face the issue of not entering Jannah with them. You have to have a clean heart to them. طيب. So there were 130 of the companions, may Allah be pleased with them, that were quoted to give fatwa. Now, their classification are as follows. One, some of the companions were known to be plentiful in giving fatwa. So we have great volumes and books of them collective. Yani for example, Umar ibn al-Khattab, there is a two-volume big book, this much, of his fatwas on everything. Muhammad Rawas Qala'iji, one of the scholars of Syria, is old, I think he's still living, but he is a researcher and he compiled these from different books of Sunnah. Seven of them were plentiful, and they were Umar ibn al-Khattab, Ali ibn Abi Talib, Ibn Mas'ud, what's his first name?
Abdullah.
Aisha, bint Abi Bakr, Zayd ibn Thabit. Make the distinction between Zayd ibn Thabit and Zayd ibn Haritha. Zayd ibn Haritha is the father of
Usama.
Zayd ibn Haritha was the adopted son of the Prophet ﷺ before adoption was abrogated. And he loved Usama, his son, who was black. And he loved his father, who was Zayd, who was white. And people used to talk behind their backs saying that, how can he be black and his father is white? There's something fishy. Not knowing that his mother, Usama's mother, was Umm Ayman, an Abyssinian slave who used to care for the Prophet. She was so old, but subhanAllah, Zayd ibn Haritha was married to who? Yes? Huh? Who? Zainab bint Jahsh. She is the cousin of the Prophet. She was from Quraysh, and the Prophet advised her to marry his freed slave, adopted slave. She married him, but she did not like him. He used to complain to him, and she used to complain. But he said, keep staying, and be patient. Until Allah ordered them to be separated, and then ordered the Prophet to marry her. so that the Arabs would know that there is no adoption. How can he marry his daughter-in-law if he was my son? But he's not. So this is what happened. Anyhow, Zayd, yes. So Zayd ibn Thabit is the scholar of the companions, and Ibn Abbas, his name is Abdullah. We often see and hear the Abadilah. They saw Abadilah of the companions. They're referring to Abdullah ibn Umar, Abdullah ibn Mas'ud, Abdullah ibn Abbas, and Abdullah ibn Amr ibn al-As, and also there is Abdullah ibn Zubayr. So these five Abadila narrated hadith. They were scholars who used to give fatwa depending on little or more. So we have Ibn Umar, may Allah be pleased with him. So the three Abadila, Ibn Mas'ud, Ibn Umar, and Ibn Abbas, were among those scholars who used to give a lot of fatwa. We have so many big volumes. Stage two, the moderate. Not a lot, but not what? Little. And they were 13. Among them was Abu Bakr, Uthman, Salama. Who's Salama? The mother of the believers, the wife of the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam. Anas ibn Malik, Abu Sa'id al-Khudri, Abu Huraira, Abdullah ibn Amr ibn al-As, Ibn al-Zubayr, that is Abdullah ibn al-Zubayr, Abu Musa al-Ash'ari, Jabir ibn Abdullah, Mu'adh ibn Jabal, Sa'd ibn Abi Waqqas, Salman, who's Salman? Al-Farisi, not any other Salman. These companions, may Allah be pleased with them, if we would just like to give a preview, it will take our day. But living with the companions is second to none. You have to see, when you study tafsir, you refresh your heart. But sometimes it becomes bored. Not because you're a kafir, but this is human nature. Sometimes you pray qiyamul layl, you become bored. So does that mean I'm sinful? No. This is human nature. You get bored. So you have to change. Now, if you study tafsir, if you study fiqh, if you study hadith, and you become bored, what to do? PlayStation 4? No, go to seerah. Go to the companions. This refreshes your heart, because whenever you compare yourself to them and to the difficulties, you find that you settle down once you read it, and it gives you a lot of boost and power, inshallah, to move on. Third category are those who gave fatwa, but it was very, very little. And among them is Al-Hasan and Al-Husayn. Who are they? The sons of Ali and Fatima. Ubay ibn Ka'b. Though Ubay is one of the learned companions in Quran, the Prophet told us, learn the Quran from four. Ubay ibn Ka'b, Abdullah ibn Mas'ud ibn Ummi Abd, Salim, Mawla Abi Hudayfa, and so on. So Ubay was a well-known, established scholar, but not everyone used to give fatwa. They used to fear saying halal haram. If I ask now, what's the ruling on this? I'll get everybody saying their verdict. No problem. If I ask what's the ruling on hedge fund? Oh, it's good. Some say haram. Mortgages. You find a lot of fatwas from people who are not even qualified. The companions used to what? Hold back. Even if they had knowledge that is 99%, they were afraid that this 1% may take them to hell. So they said, why should I bother? Take it to Sheikh. So the fatwa used to go around and come back to the individual once again. Each one is pushing it to the one next to him. Unlike what we do today, we have this, I wouldn't say it, call it courage, but it is carelessness when you have people saying, yeah, yeah, halal, halal, no problem. Or haram, without proper knowledge. So Ubay ibn Ka'ab, Abu Ayyub al-Ansari, Asma bint Abi Bakr, Zayd ibn al-Arqam, Thawban, the servant of the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam, and so on. طيب. We move on to the different categories. Ibn al-Qayyim says, jurisprudence and knowledge have spread in the nation by the hands of the students of Ibn Mas'ud, Zayd ibn Thabit, Abdullah ibn Umar, and Abdullah ibn Abbas. Which means that these four prominent companions were the cause of spreading knowledge systematically in the Islamic world. How? The Medina school had two prominent companions, Ibn Umar and Zayd ibn Thabit. Does this mean there were no other companions? No, there were so many. We said that 130. But not every one of them had their own students who would take the knowledge and pass it on. And this is the difference between the different schools of thought. We will come to that, inshallah. طيب, Mecca. Who was the sole companion that dominated the fatwa and the spreading of knowledge? Ibn Abbas. And in Iraq, we had the great scholar, the great companion, Abdullah ibn Mas'ud. And when we say that they were the schools of jurisprudence, the companions who spread it, bear in mind, when we talk about scholars, we do not compare them to nowadays scholars. Their Arabic is good. Is it? They're fluent. Not only that, I'm an Arab, huh? Not originally, but I'm born in Arabia. I'm a native Arab. I don't speak anything. My mother tongue, even my father's tongue is Arabic. But my Arabic compared to theirs is like 1 out of 1,000. Seriously, 1 out of 1,000. Because their Arabic is pure fusha, backed by poetry, by prose, by so many things just to explain to you one single word. So if I want to come to the word like Ayn, Ayn, in Usul al-Fiqh, this is the basic we study, not as an example. Any student of knowledge, when they go to university, in the subject of Usul al-Fiqh, they bring you the difference in meaning of one word to emphasize the importance of Arabic. You cannot be a student of knowledge without Arabic. Full stop. And we always give the example of Ayn. In Arabic, it refers to the letter in the alphabet. Ayn, Ghain, okay? It also refers to the eye. It's called Ayn. It refers to a spy who comes because he snoops around. It refers to the spring. Aynan fiha tusamma salsabila. Okay? So it's a spring coming from. It refers to the entity of the thing. Aynu shay. Aynu shay. The thing itself, the entity of the thing. So many meaning for one word. If you don't know Arabic, you are gone. And I always give this example. I don't know if I always give it or not. Here, somewhere else. I was doing a course in Emirates about the funeral preparation. If a person dies, how to shroud him, how to wash him, the things we do, the things we don't before death, after death, the prayer, the burial. So I was reading in one website of America, of an imam of America. Oof, America, khalas. It's correct. It has to be. So the man is saying, the imam is translating a hadith. He says, 7 are martyrs in Islam other than those who die in the battlefield. So he's saying the one who dies under a collapsing building, in fire, drowning, and stabbed. Stabbed by a knife. First time I hear this, so I know the hadith by heart.
So I said,
what is this? In reading the Arabic, the word is mat'oon. Mat'oon has two meanings. One, stabbed with a knife. The other meaning is plague. Ta'oon. So the person of dies of ta'oon is called mat'oon. So the man, because being not Arab, so says, one of the martyrs is the man being stabbed. So if I'm in Harlem, and a man says, hey, give me your wallet, or I'll stab you. He said, Alhamdulillah, I'm a martyr. And then I die and I discover that the translation was wrong. I have a problem. So it is important in Islam, in students of knowledge, you learn Arabic, not just learn it, master it. So that when you read the Quran, you feel the connection. But now you're depending on my translation of whatever I see and I say. And this is why, this is my translation. And there are mistakes, but you are following my mistakes. And this we will come, inshallah, to discuss later on when we come to blind following or ijtihad and taqlid, etc. So, these four great companions. Two in Medina. Who? Zayd ibn Thabit, Abdullah ibn Umar. One in Mecca, Abdullah ibn Abbas. One in Iraq, Abdullah ibn Mas'ud. Again, their knowledge is none compared to us. It's sufficient to know that Abdullah ibn Mas'ud said, I've taken from the mouth of the Prophet ﷺ straight more than 70 surah. How many surahs of the Quran? 114. Yani he missed 44 surahs. He wasn't there. But he took it the following hour or the following day from the companion, but he took from the Prophet's mouth straight more than 70 surahs. We don't even learn the Quran from a sheikh. We just learn it from maybe memorizing it in the masjid. Or there are scholars who memorize the Quran to the Prophet with a chain of narrators. So he says, he comes to you, my sheikh is so-and-so. He learned from his sheikh so-and-so, 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 to the Prophet ﷺ. Their knowledge is like ours? Definitely not. So knowledge is something that is really heavy. It's not something that you go like to McDonald's drive-thru, one Big Mac and one McRoyal, please. And you move on. This is not knowledge. This is drive-through knowledge. This is drive-through knowledge. You have to develop. You have to devote time. You have to spend 8-9 hours a day reading, researching, calling. Sheikh, I read this. What is the meaning of this? I don't understand. You have to communicate. Not just attend a course and that is it. You have to pay more attention, inshallah. طيب. Jurisprudence, al-fiqh, in the Tabi'in era. Now, these companions had disciples, had students. So, in Medina, who were the students? We find that we had the seven jurists, known as al-fuqaha, al-sab'a. And we had Salim, Munafi', and al-Zuhri. What is this? Now, if we would like to go into details, this would take a full day. Because you have to know who are the seven jurors. But I'll give you the name. Everybody knows Sa'id ibn al-Musayyib, one of the great tabi'in. One of the most well-known facts about him, he said that I prayed in the Masjid of the Medina for 50 years in the first row. Never missed the first row. And for 40 years, I prayed 50 years, never missed the takbirat al-ihram. But 40 years of them, I never looked at the back of someone in front of me, because there was no one in front of me. What kind of, if he was behind the imam, yes, but he was maybe a little bit to the right. Don't be technical. So, this Sa'id ibn al-Musayyib was, yani, you go to his life story, how his daughter, he rejected the proposal of the son of the king. He proposed to his daughter, he said, no. And he gave his daughter to the poorest student of his, whose wife died. So he gave it to her, to him. And after the 7 days of the wedding, the man was prepared to go. She said, where are you going? He said, I'm going to attend your father's class. He said, stay. What you find with him, you'll find with me. He said, I started learning from her, and I found her full of knowledge like her father. So he skipped his father, his teacher's classes. He stayed with his wife. She's more knowledgeable. Sa'id ibn al-Musayyib. Urwa ibn al-Zubayr. Who was his mother? Asma. But he was not a companion. He did not see the Prophet. He was born after the death of the Prophet. His father was Zubayr ibn al-Awwam, one of the 10 heaven-bound. He was a knowledgeable scholar of the Tabi'een. Al-Qasim, the son of Muhammad ibn Abi Bakr. So his grandfather was Abu Bakr as-Siddiq. Then you have Ubaydullah ibn Utbah ibn Mas'ud. Then the son of Zayd ibn Thabit, his name is Kharija. So again, all their parents were companions, were scholars. Sulaiman ibn Yasar. And the seventh, there is a difference of opinion among scholars. The most authentic is Abu Salama, the son of Abdurrahman ibn Auf. And some say he is other than that. We will not go into this, inshallah. So these are the seven jurors, well known in Medina at the time of the Tabi'een, to be places of fatwa. Anyone who has a problem, he goes to them. But also with them was Salim. Who was Salim? The son of Abdullah ibn Umar. So Abdullah ibn Umar was the prominent mufti along with Zayd ibn Thabit. So his son was a tabi'i, Salim ibn Abdullah ibn Umar. The other one is Nafi'. And who's Nafi'? The freed slave of Ibn Umar again. So again, all those connected to Ibn Umar were scholars of the religion. And Az-Zuhri ibn Shihab. Az-Zuhri was one of the tabi'een, and he's also one of the well-known scholars of Medina. If you go to Mecca, you find the students of Ibn Abbas. And you have Ata ibn Rabah. He was a freed slave. But he came to become, or he ended becoming one of the greatest scholars of Islam, of Mecca. The Khalifa came for Hajj. And everybody in Hajj, crowded, everybody was giving way to Ata, who was black, slave. And the Khalifa was shocked. Nobody's giving me respect and giving me way. But Ata, this slave, they're giving him way and asking him about rulings of Hajj and, you know, respecting him. And he was a little bit, you know, upset. Who's this slave? He said, this is Ata ibn Rabah. He's one of the greatest scholars of Mecca. He said, subhanAllah, Allah uplifts people with knowledge. This is why he's deserving it, because of his knowledge. I am the king, nobody's even looking at me. And there is Tawus, there is Mujahid, there is Ikrimah. All of these are great scholars of the Tabi'een. If you open the book of Ibn Kathir, you will always find them interpreting the Quran, giving tafsir, because Ibn Abbas was the leader of interpreting the Quran, so they were carrying it to us. If you go to Al-Basra, where is Al-Basra? In Iraq. So at the time of the Tabi'een, we had two, Basra and we had Kufa. These two prominent cities. In Al-Basra, we had the famous Tabi'i, Al-Hasan Al-Basri. Then you have Ibn Sirin, Muhammad Ibn Sirin. And you have Abu Qulabah, and you have Qatada. When you go to Al-Kufa, you have also the students of Abdullah ibn Mas'ud. You have Alqama and his student Ibrahim al-Nakhi. You have Masruq, you have Ubaidah, and you have Shuraih al-Qadi. But again, this is for your own homework. You go and study their names and go into their biography and learn their way of acquiring knowledge and how they spread the knowledge of ad-Din. طيب. Now we move on to the third category, which is the period of the schools of thought. We have four prominent schools of thought, led by the imams who established these schools of thought. Number one, Abu Hanifa, born in year 80, died in year 150. Malik, born in 93, died in 179. Al-Shafi'i, born in 150. We've seen 150 here before, right?
Yeah.
When? So he was born when Abu Hanifa died. And he died in 204. Ahmad, and please remember these figures, the birth and the death, because later on in the presentation, it's missing. So you may need to add it. Born in 164 and died in 241. Before we go to the four imams, the four great schools of thought, we have to special mention the imams of extinct schools of thought. We have Al-Hasan al-Basri, who had his own school of thought. We have Sufyan al-Thawri. We have Al-Imam al-Awza'i of Lebanon. We have Al-Layth ibn Sa'd of Egypt. And Al-Layth ibn Sa'd, for example, was a contemporary of Imam Malik. Yet, they all say that Al-Layth ibn Sa'd was more knowledgeable than Imam Malik. And one of the advantages of Imam Al-Layth ibn Sa'd, he was a judge and he was a millionaire in Egypt. And he used to sponsor students of knowledge and scholars, among them Imam Malik. So not only he was knowledgeable, he used to benefit people with what? With money. And this means, and this shows you the true fabric of such scholars. It's not only teaching, it's also implementing. You had also Sufyan ibn Uyayna. You had the famous Muhaddith Ishaq ibn Rahoya, and he was a contemporary of Imam Ahmad. Now, Ishaq ibn Rahoya, some say his name differently. You can say Ishaq ibn Rahoya, and you can say Ishaq ibn Rahoway, like Sibawe or Siboya. It is pronounced differently. Jurors pronounce it differently to Muhaddith, people of Hadith. This is some. And you have Abu Thawr and Ibn Jarir al-Tabari, the well-known compiler of Tafsir. Tafsir al-Tabari, the well-known. طيب, why do we say that they had extinct schools of thought when they had more knowledge than the four imams? The scholars say the difference between these extinct schools and the existing four schools, that the four schools of thought had students devoted to spreading the teachings of their sheikh. These other sheikh, these other imams, did not have the same devoted students. And this is why Al-Layth ibn Sa'd, though was more knowledgeable than Imam Malik, Allah did not facilitate for his madhab to be widely spread, because he did not have a lot of students. He did not have a lot of classes and conducted like Imam Malik ibn Anas. May Allah have mercy on them all. طيب. Now if we begin, we will not finish. So how about we take a break And we will come back at 12:05. Okay? Inshallah.